Hello everyone and welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz here on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio. And this week we have two amazing guests, the inspirational and brilliant Sophie Blake, who takes us through her journey in an amazing part one from how she grew up, battled dyslexia, how she got into the media and other struggles during her life. And also part one from Molly Campbell. Molly's only 14, but one of the most amazing golfers you'll ever see. And we've got a recap of 2022 from Molly about how she had knee problems. She's come through that. She's still managed to reduce her handicap despite having growth spurts and having to change her swing. Throw in our SLB sports roundup and we know you'll love the show. Let's get on with it. You'll never stop this day. I will never let you go. Well, who am I to say? Maybe by now you should know. You got your somebody calling. You think you're somebody, don't you? I think you're scared of keeping somebody close. Well, hello, everybody. This week, I'm joined by a very special person, media personality, Sophie Blake. Hi, Sophie. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you, John?
Really doing well, thank you. Not enjoying it when I'm looking out of the window, but apart from that, yeah, already rolling in 2023. What about you?
Yeah, it's rubbish. I hate weather. I'm one of those people that wants January and February to just go on fast forward and just head into the spring. I just hate looking at this miserable weather and this non-stop rain and the grey and the fog. And I'm just a summer person. I love the summer.
Yeah. And obviously you're in a fantastic part of the world to enjoy it as well when it's nice.
Yeah, very, very lucky. And that's why I moved here. I love the beach. So fortunate that a lot of people don't realise as well how lucky we are around here. We're surrounded by the South Downs, which is just beautiful. And you've got about 180 miles worth of walks, really pretty, like little Sussex countryside villages and really nice pubs. So to live here with a dog is just fantastic. You've just got a bit of everything. City by the sea, but I can be in London in an hour. So it's great.
Yeah, perfect getaway from the rat race, as it were.
Really, it is. And you can see that in the summer, though, when it's when the beach is just full of, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, and yeah, it's crazy. But we know the quieter areas to get off
that's
to,
good.
So that's not too bad.
And you also when to escape if you need to.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. But then I've got a teenage daughter, and she loves it when it's like that. Her and her friends, they will head down to the beach where the crowds are.
Yeah.
They love having all that life around them. So for them, it's just fantastic. They love it.
Yeah, perfect. Sounds brilliant. And obviously, you say you've got a teenage daughter. She's going through exams at the moment. Obviously, being a mum, it's another trying time in a way.
Yeah, she's doing her mocks at the moment. So she had a load of mocks in November, and then they do them twice now before they do their GCSE. So she's currently doing the next round of mocks. So yeah, so she had that hanging over her for Christmas. So that's what she's busy doing at the moment. So she's got two solid weeks every day of exams, and then a break again, lots more studying, and then heading up into doing the GCSEs in the summer. And I can't believe my little baby is doing GCSEs and then heading off to sixth form. It's mad. It's just gone so quickly.
If she stays on, she stays on. But effectively, it could be the end of school. She's that age.
She is. She's going to stay on. She's applied to lots of colleges. Her plan is to carry on studying. Right. She's massively into music. So, you know, that's what she's really hoping to get into. So they've got the pressure on them to do well, to get those exams, to get into them all. But, you know, we're going to work hard. I'm her revision buddy. I'm rubbish. I mainly provide snacks, teas. Like, do you want a bath run? Blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to maths and science, I'm like, should we watch a YouTube tutorial? Because I'm no good whatsoever with it.
You sound like the perfect revision buddy.
I try.
You mentioned that Maya's into music. We'll perhaps come on to that a little bit later when we're talking more about now and things that might happen in music and her pathway. Obviously, we've got you onto the radio. Talk about yourself, both, you know, personal and what you did in the media and in sports. But I could just take it back to the start, really, so people can get to know you, Sophie. What was it like, you know, growing up? You were studying. What did you study? How did you get into media at a young age?
So I kind of fell into media by accident, really. When I was at school, I was diagnosed at 15 with dyslexia. Really great teacher I'd always known for a really long time, an English teacher. Back in those days, you know, in the 80s, it was a lot harder to get diagnosed then. And dyscalculia, so really bad with maths and numbers. So I got diagnosed finally at 15. But in those days, they just used to give you like an extra 10 minutes or half an hour in your exam, so it wasn't much help.
No.
But I was very creative, so my things were, I did love history, and did really well in history. I did love English literature, theatre, drama, art, so that was the side that I went to. And then I did my A-levels, then I did a foundation course at the Actors Institute up in London, and then I became your typical, worked in bars and restaurants.
Right, okay.
When you want to kind of get into that industry, and I was terrible at actually ever doing an audition. I had no confidence, which is so sad. I look back and think, God, why didn't I actually go for it and push myself forward? But I just really lacked in confidence to do things like that. But I discovered that working in bars and restaurants, I could save up loads of money quite quickly with tips and not spending hardly anything, and then just go traveling. And I got the travel bug.
Wow, yeah.
So I did that until I was about 25.
Nothing wrong with that.
It was only going to be like a year or two, and then I was like, oh, hang on, but then I want to go here, and I just loved it, really loved it. So yeah, worked in bars and restaurants for a long time, and I did really enjoy that. I made great friends, still got some lifelong friends from doing that as well, and it was really good fun, and got to see lots of lovely places. And then I became a supervisor in a Mexican restaurant, and just had that kind of epiphany one day of just thinking, I really want to do something else now. And that's when my life changed in a completely different direction. A guy came in who was launching a new internet style TV. I think it was going to be a shopping channel. It never materialized. It didn't happen. But he was a customer and said, you know, would you be interested? Have you worked in TV or have you done modeling and blah, blah, blah? And I said, no. He was like, well, come along and do these interviews, meet the other women, the girls doing it. So I did. And funnily enough, we did all the press interviews. There still wasn't a channel.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was hilarious. We were doing all these photo shoots and we were doing articles in like the Evening Standard about this TV channel that was going to be launching and blah, blah, blah. And it didn't materialize, but it made me think, well, okay, I've done these shoots. So I phoned up a couple of model agencies, because obviously the internet didn't exist then, and sent the photos off and got an agent. So I was quite old getting into modeling. I was 26.
Yeah.
But back in those days, I don't know if things have changed in terms of that, but you needed to be over 22 or 23, it could be completely wrong, to be able to do alcohol and cigarettes and advertising at that point.
Okay.
You had to be a bit older. So like one of my first jobs that they sent me for a casting for was like a Bacardi's ad that was a nationwide one in pubs, and then like a case cider. And I just started doing things like that, really, and did a lot of, you know, editorial advertising campaigns. And then through that, I made the connections with people in television, because they were like, well, you're good at talking. When I'd be on shoots and yabbering away to everybody, have you thought about going into TV? And I was like, well, no, I haven't actually. You know, I thought I would have missed the boat. And then a guy I was working with said that they had a company and they were looking for a presenter down in Southampton to do beach volleyball show.
Oh.
Did I want to go for an audition? The Granada TV that existed at the time down there. So I went down, did a screen test, got the show, but the show got axed before it launched.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was one of those when I thought, oh, well, that would have been fun, but, you know, never mind. But then they contacted me about a week or two later and they said, look, we need another presenter. There's a show that's already been on for a season called Footy Shorts, which is on Channel 5. Would you like to come down and do a screen test for that? So I did that, and it was interviewing Premiership footballers in the back of a car in a limo.
Right.
In a section called Stars in Cars. And then I got that job. So yeah, I ended up like a week later sitting in the back of a limo interviewing like Rio Ferdinand and Frank Lampard and
oh,
all
wow.
these people. And yeah, got to travel all around the country. And then I started doing lots of the actual main segments of the show as well. Yeah, that was just brilliant. So I literally fell into it, all of it.
Yeah.
Just kind of by mistake. I was just really lucky. Just made the right connections at the right time. And I had an absolute ball doing that show. We traveled all over. I got like flown to LA to do an interview with Jürgen Klinsmann when he was living out there. And it was only a half an hour interview, but we were out there for like 5 days.
As you do.
Yeah, we filmed a few links, but it was back in the day when they were just going, well, you know, you're here, you might as well just go and have some fun. And I was with this brilliant cast that I worked with on that show, and we just had so much fun, and we just did loads of stuff like that. So I did quite a lot of stuff with Channel 5 for quite a long time. And that's basically how I landed myself a TV career.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, sometimes that is how it is, you know. They say, you know, things happen for a reason. There's a few quotes in the world, and that's one of them that I believe that actually are said for a reason, if that makes sense. You know, things do happen for a reason. Sometimes you sit back and think, wow, that wasn't very nice. Why did that happen? And 3 months, 6 months, 2 days, 2 years down the line, you think, well, if that had happened, I wouldn't be where I am now. One thing I want to just touch on, if you don't mind, because it's quite relevant to people that I've interviewed and I work with. There's a jockey, well, she's an ex-jockey now. Sadly, she had some bad experiences and she left the sport, but she's from Italy, and people moan about the British racing school, oh, it's difficult to get through. She came over to England, and with 18 months, she'd gone through the whole British racing school, and she's dyslexic, and she learnt English. That was inspiring. And there's another girl who coaches our girls who is dyslexic, and we do scholarships for girls to go and study and play football, or soccer as they call it in America, and under education, get a degree and play football. She's dyslexic, and if it hadn't have been for the fact she didn't have the confidence to go away for 4 years, one of the coaches I worked with over there had written her a coaching so that she could have gone over and done very minimal written stuff, but she was still willing to do it. She's dyslexic as well. So they're very inspirational. So the fact that you, after being diagnosed with dyslexia, and it was a lot harder then, trust me, I'm not dyslexic, but I know people that were, or that thought they were when I was at school. To actually go and have a media career, which you have done. You've done a bit of modelling, you've done TV. How inspirational. Yeah. You must feel inspired when you look back and think how you could have inspired people with dyslexia to show that it's not impossible.
I hope so. And there were parts of it where it definitely did hinder things. Like when I started working with Sky Sports, they put me forward for a couple of times to work on the Sky Sports News on the live desk. Yeah. So when I did the screen test for that, that was horrendous for me, because you're reading an auto cue, and when you're reading an auto cue and you're being thrown all the names of different footballers and sports people from all over the world, and it's fast and it's rolling, and I didn't have time to learn it like you would do a script. I was appalling. I could not keep up, because I have to do things phonetically. So when I worked with Channel 5 and I used to record lots of the late night sports shows throughout the evening, we would do that as pre-records, and I would go through the auto cue first, and I would have everything rewritten for myself phonetically, so I would be able to say them, so that I could look at it and go, okay, this is how I would say that, this is how I would say this, blah blah blah. But I couldn't do it live. I could do live TV, but I could do live auto cue reading, because I didn't have the brain to ratio of trying to figure out what I was reading in time. Just wouldn't work. And I think it caused quite a lot of amusement, because I didn't tell Sky at the time that I was dyslexic. I didn't tell them for quite a few years.
Right.
Because I didn't want to not get the job. Yeah. And so I think they just thought that basically I was an appalling reader.
So basically, in your mind, because of your dyslexia, you thought it was better to be considered terrible at one aspect of the job, but brilliant at another, in order to perhaps keep your foot in the door, as it
were. Because it was also, you know, I was, 2003 when I joined Sky. You know, we're dealing a lot with numbers, and, you know, when you're doing live TV, especially my main thing was Speedway for years.
Yes.
I was dealing with scores. Live scores,
yes.
The numbers that the riders were wearing, and it was literally, I would write little notes everywhere to remind myself, because I'd be reading things and my brain mentally was exhausted at the end. My way of coping with it, and like I said, I didn't tell anyone when I went for the screen test, and I didn't actually say anything, I don't think, until I stopped doing it. I have folders at home. I would colour code everything about, you know, every team, every rider, the clubs, the history, for the Grand Prix and then for the clubs. And then I would make notes before every live meeting that I would go to.
Yeah.
I would have notes with me, and then I would have a little book on a file in front of me, and I would have notes everywhere in different colours, because that was my way of working for me to be able to go, okay, this is this. But the numbers, when that was coming through so much with scores, and then you're adding up the scores and blah, 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 my brain would feel fried at the end. Yes. It really did. I did it.
Yeah.
You know, I did do it, and you have to find what works for you. So I knew what my strengths were, and I knew what my weaknesses were. So, you know, just avoided doing those and go for what I was able to do.
Now, absolutely. And, you know, it is inspirational. I was actually going to ask you, remembering back to when you were presenting Speedway, from my point of view, and I know it was a long time ago, you know, it never stood out, if that makes sense. It was never like, good. Oh, you know, she shouldn't have the job. Do you know what I mean? It was never like that. And I wondered what your coping mechanism was, or whether you've obviously got notes, but being live, when you do interviews, there's obviously questions that you throw out from your answers. Was it just basically also relying on your knowledge of the sport?
I would do loads and loads of research. I'd never been involved in Speedway when I started presenting it. Yeah. I'd only seen one or two live Speedway meetings beforehand. So yeah. I literally was starting from the bottom and working my way up. But I just didn't have hardly any knowledge of Speedway. Right. So it was a massive learning curve. I also had never worked in live TV. Everything I did with Channel 5 years before yeah. that, and bits and pieces with BBC and ITV were all pre-records. So it was a massive learning curve, and I was really chucked in at the deep end. You would have a producer, depending on who you're working with. People would feed you things in your ear. Especially when I was starting, but it would be really difficult to hear. Then, because you're in the pits and when the bikes were revving and the engines were revving, the noise was unbelievable. Yeah. So we used to wear cans back then. Do you remember those? Those yeah. really big clumpy things on your head that would be yeah. like a vice.
Yes.
So you would have the noise coming out in one ear, a director in another ear, a producer in another ear, countdowns yeah. going on, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's crazy. So I decided what worked for me better was yeah. to turn them off. And right. I would just do loads and loads of research, and I'd have a floor manager a lot of the time that would just count me down, or yeah. in my ear they would just say, oh, Sophie, you know, throw to the studio or throw to the comms, blah, blah, blah. Because again, when I'm trying to think everything through with the way my brain was working, I didn't need that noise coming from every direction. So I just like to have the calmness in my head, listen to the interviews and respond yeah. to an interview as it was happening. So again, that was all a learning curve because yeah. it was all completely new for me. And then after I'd had a bit of time off, after I had Myra and went back with Eurosport, and then they no longer had the big cans, it was just earpieces. That was yeah. lovely because just made such a difference yeah. to all that noise going on and what you could feed out and listen to. Yeah, so that was how I worked. I literally would just do loads of prepping. Loads yeah. of research.
And hard yeah. work, isn't it? It's what you put into things, isn't it, really?
That's oh, God, absolutely. You can't just turn up and no. just think it's going to work. Because, yes, you can do an interview about that particular race that you've just witnessed, but if you want to kind of get into a bit more depth about riders yeah. and clubs, and you want to talk to them about, okay, because in your last meeting you had this issue with the bike, or, you know, you've been having some issues, you know, psychologically with how things have been impacting you and blah, blah, blah. You can't feed on with anything if you're not making those studies and learning about everyone that you're dealing with to get a personal aspect in as well, you know. And so that's how I worked, and that's how I did it for me personally. I know everybody has their own different ways. Some people don't really need to do that much prepping. Their brains just store all the information perfectly, whereas with me, I was a big prepper before every show.
Yeah, that's good. And that's still important.
Yeah.
It showed, as I said, and I'm not just saying that, it never stood out. So that was your prep. Yeah, all credit to you. So you've done a lot yeah. in television.
Yeah, no, I haven't worked in TV for quite a few years now. Yeah. But yeah, when I did, and I did lots of different things for Sky, and, you know, great time. I got to travel the world and just have all these amazing experiences. You know, it wasn't yeah. just Speedway, pool, Fishmania. Yeah.
Moscone Cup,
but in table
isn't
tennis,
it?
Moscone Cup. Yeah. Bowling, yeah, the Super Bowl party.
There you go.
Those Super Bowl bashes were great fun.
Yeah.
The last one I did of those, funnily enough, I was 6 months pregnant with Maya. That was one of the last ones I did for those because I just went on crutches because my hip went out.
Oh, wow.
So I was trying to look all glamorous walking around this big party with this big bump and this sparkly top on, and we would do these interviews, throw the crutches on the floor, do an interview, and then quickly pick them up again so I could hobble over to the
wow.
next one.
There you go, look at that. That's dedication. So we've done your TV career, Sophie, and I hope you don't mind, we're going to move on to slightly more personal stuff now. You were diagnosed with Asherman syndrome,
yeah, yes, that's correct.
2009. I mean, are you happy just to briefly explain what that involves to people that don't know what it
yeah.
is and how it affected your life and what changes you had to make?
Yeah, so basically when I had my daughter, I had what's called a retained placenta when I was giving birth. The placenta didn't come out, so I was hemorrhaging, so it was really bad. And they had to do an emergency D&C, which is where they do a blind scrape with a metal instrument.
Right.
Yeah, so it's not done under guided ultrasound. They're doing it blind. They can't see what they're doing. And unfortunately, 2 weeks later, there were still bits and pieces left inside. So the early start of, you know, getting blood poisoning and
yeah.
everything. Rushed in for another emergency D&C, did the whole lining, and then it was kind of left, right, okay, go off, live your life type thing, you know, being mum. And it was quite obvious to me very early on that something wasn't feeling right. And I kept saying to the GPs and the midwives when you're seeing them for your checkups afterwards
yeah.
and told, no, there's nothing wrong. But I was in so much pain. And I'm like, that's just your womb recovering and all these things. They were doing the hormone test and you're saying there's nothing wrong. Your levels are fine. But I just knew that something wasn't right. I was having this terrible pain monthly, and I don't know how much you want to get involved in the information of it all, but basically I wasn't having periods, they didn't return, but every month I was having horrendous pain, that like debilitating pain when I couldn't move. And eventually I had some scans, didn't show anything up. I did lots of my own research, and I found, and again, it was before all these support groups were set up, and it was like a Yahoo support group for people that I found online of this thing called Asherman syndrome, for if you'd had a DNC and issues it could cause. So found this group called Asherman's, and I had like ticked the boxes for everything, went to my GP and said, I think I've got Asherman syndrome. No. I spoke to the gynae consultant I was seeing. No, you could possibly have it. You know, it's one of those things, 30 years, I've never seen. So they went to do a hysteroscopy where they just kind of take a look about what's going on inside. Couldn't get through because basically my whole entire womb was a ball of scar tissue. And what had happened is that when my body was trying to heal, because it had been so aggressively done, they literally scraped away the entire wall of the lining. Look, other things can cause this as well. Any trauma to the womb or the uterus can cause this scarring to happen, but a DNC is one of the main causes of it. And unfortunately, it's one of those things that far more people suffer from than people are aware of. Doctors aren't trained for it. So when nurses and doctors and even midwives do all their training, they're not taught about Asherman syndrome or what to look for. So I had loads and loads of operations to try to remove the scarring. It would just keep growing back. So basically my periods had just been being reabsorbed into my body. There was nowhere for it to go. So that's what the horrible pain was. The adhesions were then forming around everywhere else. So in the end, I was trying for another baby at the time.
Right.
Really wanted to have another baby with, you know, to give my daughter a brother or sister. So I had done all these operations, but even was trying IVF when I'd have an op, and they'd go, this is your optimum window, you know, do the IVF. So every time I was having all of these, I was getting pumped full of HRT as well. Oh, so all the hormones going in. I did get pregnant. I had a miracle pregnancy after being told that, you know, it wasn't going to work. The IVF had failed. But unfortunately, because of the Asherman syndrome and the scarring, I had something called placenta previa at 17 weeks, which meant the placenta ripped out. So I lost the baby because of that, and just the most horrible hemorrhage. Here at Brighton, I'm visiting my sister for a day, and it happened here in Brighton, actually, and they saved my life.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, back with me today is our favourite golfer. It's Molly Campbell. Hi, Molly. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yep, we're doing well, thank you. So happy to be speaking to you again. It's been quite a decent year from what I've seen. I just wanted to go through how you're doing, how the year's been for you, and your hopes for next year, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine.
Brilliant, Molly. Thank you so much. So, yeah, just start off, really, by the simple question. How do you feel your 2022's gone?
I think it's gone well, to be honest. Like, bear in mind, like, the circumstances, obviously, like, I'm getting physio with my knee, which is helping a lot. So I think it's gone quite well. And definitely towards the end of the year, I'm seeing sort of, like, little rewards from all the hard work I've put in. I've made a lot of swing changes this year, and it's just really nice to see little things that are almost only really I and my coach and my dad can see, but they're nice to see sort of things.
Absolutely. And with swing changes, obviously, without getting too technical for people, even the slightest change can take quite a lot of adapting to.
Yeah. Obviously, when you grow, especially like when you're young and stuff, obviously it changes your stance, like, and swing completely. Because obviously you get older, naturally you become less flexible. So before this season, I had a very, very long swing. And what I've been doing over the past sort of year is trying to shorten it, because before I become too unflexible, if that makes sense. So we don't want to have to do it whilst the problem is I'm not flexible enough. So I'm still flexible enough to swing like that, but it's better to do it now before it then causes the problem.
Yeah, and it's part of that to, like, protect your body as you do get older?
Yeah, because obviously stretching all the way there, the golf swing isn't natural as it is, because your body isn't meant to move like for a golf swing, and just trying to enhance as little grave injury as possible is the ideal scenario.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you for letting us know that. One thing that I was going to ask that you've already touched on, actually, was growth spurts. I know that's natural in younger people, but you've grown quite a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, I'd say probably my natural sort of growth spurt is always in around the summer, which isn't great for goals. Obviously, that's like peak season.
Yeah.
What we're working on at the minute is trying to like create that short swing, which then it helps to change when I have a growth spurt. Instead of having to look at all these different things that could be affecting it, I know that it's probably just my stance or I'm stood too close to the ball sort of thing. So it's just trying to minute little things, because obviously everyone has issues with their swing, everyone has issues like here and there. There's always going to be little things that you're going to be working on, but it's just trying to like almost make them
even
smaller.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I fully understand, and it's really very interesting to listen to. A couple of things about the growth and then what you've done with your swing. The growth, what does that do? Does that mean you stand further away from the ball? Does it mean you have to change the angle that you swing? What's the main problem with a growth spurt?
Well, the issue with a growth spurt is, let's just say, for example, at the minute, when I'm stood to the ball, as making it as simple as possible, I'm stood with about shoulder width apart and I'm almost hanging over the ball with my knees slightly bent.
Yeah.
But as I grow, if I'm stood in that same position trying to hang over the ball, my knees will be more locked.
Right.
Which then you don't want, because then you're losing almost connection with the ground. It's hard to explain, but yeah, you're losing almost connection with the ground, and that kind of, where for me, I generate most of my power through the ground. So not doing that, then it's removing elements of power.
Right,
so
okay.
When you have a growth spurt, it's like you're stood more upright, is a simple way of putting it. So you kind of want to move further away from the ball, so then you can naturally hang more of the ball with slightly bent knees.
Right, yeah, so perfect. That last bit was absolutely perfect. So effectively, you just move a little bit further away from the ball just to coordinate yourself as you were, but just in a slightly taller frame sort of thing.
Yeah, because you're not changing anything in your swing, but it's just changing little things in your stance that it makes a big difference. Because if you're stood too close to the ball, like, you can almost crunch up. When you're making impact with the ball, your elbow can kind of push into your stomach, which you won't actually feel like, but that's kind of an over-exaggeration. Like,
right.
And then it can create, like, a scoop, which makes your ball go tight.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And then you said you've changed your swing slightly. Well, what you actually said was you're making it shorter in order to protect the body. Not how do you do that, but what difference does that make to you? And how difficult is it to keep your coordination if you're actually bringing the club down at an earlier stage?
Well, you're making the swing shorter, but you're not actually kind of bringing it down faster.
Okay.
Because when you have a really long swing, you have less time at the top, which then creates a very light up-down momentum.
Right.
When in the ideal scenario for swing, you want up, pause, then down. Because otherwise, you're almost going against gravity, and then you're using your arms to pull through. When what you want to do is, you want to pull up with your body and use strength to come up, and then let gravity bring the club back down, because you want to let the club do the work, in a simple way of putting it. So shortening the swing is allowing for that small amount pause, where you can then create more speed and force through the ball,
right.
And also you can create more power through the ground as well.
And that's perfect, because that has really explained and given people the insight almost. It's not actually bring it down quicker, it just allows, as you said, that pause at the top, which is fabulous to hear. You mentioned about your knee, Molly. I know you've had issues with your knee, you know, for a while now. How does that affect your golf? Do you find you're either trying to protect it, or you're being told perhaps by the doctors to protect it, or do you effectively just play through the pain barrier?
I'm not in as much pain anymore, on a regular basis for it, but beforehand it was just like you have to kind of play through the pain.
Yeah.
You can't hold back on it, because as a right-handed golfer, your left knee is basically the dominant part of the swing, because most people would expect like, oh, your hands, your arms, that's a bit trying to club, when you're realistically taking all the force into the ground, and it's taking all the impact as well, because when you're swinging through, obviously you're almost making the vibration through your body.
Yeah.
Because your left knee taking all the force for it.
Right, okay.
And obviously there's a lot of speed and a lot of force coming through, but and the higher swing speeds you have, then the more force driven onto the left knee. But when you try and hold back on it, then it just creates more issues, because one, you can create more in through that.
Yeah.
And two, you're impacting your swing, because by not driving through on your left constantly and finishing, then you're not finishing your swing.
Because
yes, you can still hit the ball. If you're like almost not putting weight on that left knee, then you're not completing the golf swing.
Right. That's a lovely way of explaining it, you know, liking it to football terms, that if you're going for a tackle half-hearted, you're more likely to get hurt. Yeah, so no, that's absolutely, well, not wonderful about your knee, but thank you for explaining it. And great news that the pain is reducing. It looks like your knee's getting better. That's a brilliant thing to hear. So let's move forward with a few questions about 2022. You said you think it's gone well, especially towards the end. How have you done and progressed with your handicap through the year, considering you've made changes?
Well, I think I started the year on about 6-ish.
Yeah.
And I'm now officially 3.1 to my index. So each year I always have the mentality that I want to at least half my handicap.
Yeah.
And I've done it since I'm literally like, a 54 handicapper.
Yeah.
So I've always tried to half my handicap. Like, the higher handicap you are, the more chunk, like it seems. But when you get to a lower handicap, it's a lot harder than it at these, because when you're high handicapper, you come down in like 0.5 to then 0.2s.
Yeah.
But now I only come down like 0.1s. It's a big difference, really. So progressively over the year, I think I've done quite well, because I have technically halved my handicap, and then hopefully I will do that again next year, but hopefully even better.
Molly, you're right. It's absolutely phenomenal. I remember you being over 12, I think, when you started last year. So you got it down to 6-ish. I mean, I think you might have even been higher than that. And to get it down to 3.1, it is just brilliant. And what you say about it being harder is absolutely correct. Again, for me, my experience with coaching is in football. And you see more progression in girls that have either just started or haven't had high-level coaching when they come to you, because there's just more room for improvement, as it were. So, I mean, the fact you've got it down to 3.1 anyway is an absolute phenomenal job. But the fact you've done it, still with your knee problems, the fact you've been changing your swing, you know, and I know what you like, your changes, you try and take them to the course. It's not like you forget about them. So, yeah, that's a phenomenal job, Molly. Well done. Absolutely brilliant on that.
Thank you.
No problem at all. So, yeah, again, you've had a few wins this year. What's a couple of the most notable wins you've had this year?
Well, this year I haven't really gone anywhere. Like, I haven't been to Scotland, I haven't been to Ireland. I've just been playing in, like, loads of things this year. Like, a couple of junior opens that I loved playing. Wellingborough Junior Open, there was Nuneaton Junior Open, Worksop as well. They're, like, my three personal favourite junior opens I like to play in. And they're really nice to try and support. And then just mainly really club competitions as well, because obviously with my knee and with all these big swing changes, it's not really worthwhile going elsewhere, because you look at like all these multiple England golf day events, and all the accommodation, the fuel at the minute, like all like the hospitality, everything like that, it all adds up. And to then be sort of investing in that almost whilst I'm only really on one knee.
Yeah.
And also, whilst I'm in big swing change, we didn't really see the worth in it, and we just thought, once we'll drive hard this winter and we'll be ready for next season when we can really push at them.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, it's understandable, Molly. I mean, the fact that you've won at all with changing your swing is fabulous. Again, you know, it just shows you your talent, your drive, your confidence. It's just amazing. Now, I remember the Junior Open I come to see you in. It was such a terrible day for weather. I think I remember your dad saying if it had been like a proper event, they would have cancelled it because the wind was so high. What a great day that was for me. I mean, I think on the first hole, you put your second shot to about 3 foot. Just shaking my head in disbelief. So, yeah, I mean, the fact you're changing your swing and everything like that is just amazing. Absolutely brilliant. Great. So a couple of final things, because I know you've got a busy schedule today, so appreciate your time. I noticed that you won the Junior Player of the Year at your course. Tell us about that and, you know, what an achievement and how that feels to win an award like that at such a notable course.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, because I've been at the Eastern for probably like 9 years now, which is pretty much my whole time playing golf. And I've pretty much grown up around that. I know everybody, everybody knows me. I'm going to be honest, it's not the best course out there.
No.
But it's nice to be almost loyal to it. And it's nice to see the like almost little things coming back sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it goes a long way. Loyalty like that is reducing throughout the world year on year. I know you and your dad are like that anyway, but it's nice to see. How's that voted? Is that voted by the committee, by your peers? Who votes for that?
I think think it's our junior organised. It's on our accumulation of things because we have most improved golfer of the year,
yeah,
and we have player of the year. So improvement's more for sort of younger kids where we look at like,
yeah,
what they're doing in training sessions, all that sort of thing. And then player of the year is actually like extension handicap.
Yes.
So I think I came down in 62%, I think it was. And they normally go up high percentage, you come down. That's what normally player of the year is.
Okay. Fabulous. Again, yeah, you're right. I mean, 3.1, I mean, makes next year incredibly hard, doesn't it? You'd be looking at like 1.5, won't you, really? I know you're probably looking for scratch, but, you know, 1.5 is 50%. So, yeah, so moving on about that, you know, a nice link to move on to next year. Have you got any plans or any wishes or any goals for 2023?
Well, 2023, probably, I think we're going to try and explore these different competitions because I've never really been in any of them before. I've never been in a multiple day England golf sort of thing. There's loads of Yorkshire girls stuff that I want to go into, and then there's Scottish girls as well I want to look at.
Yeah.
So it's just really exploring what's out there and just seeing what we can. I know there's a couple of under 21 events that I want to try, which will be a really nice experience because realistically it's going to be tough, but it'll be really important, I think, beneficial for me to play in them.
Yeah, well, you've never been one to stay in your comfort zone, Molly. That's all credit to you and your dad, but I only think that's of benefit to you. It's amazing, you know, what you do, and we're all for that with the football, but it's great that you're always pushing yourself. Just one final topic, Molly, before I let you go, sorry. Obviously, you were selected for the regional under-18 England squad, which I think we discussed last time, being 13 years old, which is, again, an amazing achievement. Is that something that you can be a part of? Are you going to be going to events with that next year?
Well, being part of the England regional squad, it's like more of a training sort of thing. So you get coached and you get kind of almost a person. Like we have Hannah, for example, who's a professional and she's really lovely. So she comes along, she's been through the squad and like she kind of gives us like pep talks is another word of putting it.
Yeah.
So it's really nice because all the girls are lovely and it's nice to have sort of you can relate to almost because golf is a very lonely sport. Honest,
yeah.
There's no team in it. You can play for county and stuff, but at the end of the day, like when you're out there, it's you and whoever you're playing against. You can have all your coach and stuff, but when you're on the course, you're on your own, really.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have almost like a team, another way of putting it. I think we have a couple of matches where we play against North Region and South Region.
Yeah.
So we play against different regional teams, and then that's mainly just our coach will come and assess us in competitions, that sort of thing. So this season for them runs until the end of August.
Okay.
And in September, then we have to go and reapply. And if you get back in again, it's the same sort of thing. But when I turn 16 will be my final year, which is obviously GCSE year. But then they have a programme called DICE, which is an A-level. And you can do your school A-level alongside it. But it's basically, it's two A-levels, so your theory and your practical. So that's a two-year programme, which is offered to you when you're 17 and 18, obviously.
Yeah.
And then that's pretty much you've done with the squad. But if you then pass that with a higher grade, then you're guaranteed a spot at Loughborough University, which is really good.
Fabulous. No, I mean, it's great, and it's lovely that you're already looking into these sort of opportunities, you know, and setting your goals. And nothing better, really, than to be given advice and encouragement from somebody who's been there and done it and been through the whole system.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, Molly, it's come to the end of today. I just want to say that it's always a pleasure. It's always lovely to catch up with you. Thank you very much. I hope you had a great Christmas. Have a great New Year, and we'll catch up in the next week.
And you, John. Thank you for
having
me.
Thanks, Molly. Take care.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
This is RSLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, darts, tennis, motorsport, NBA and football. We start with golf and the PGA Tour held the Sony Open from the Waihele Country Club in Honolulu. And it was won by SW Kim on minus 18, going round in round 4 in minus 6 and taking the title by one shot from Hayden Buckley on minus 17. two further back to Chris Kirk on minus 15. This week it's the American Express from the PGA West Private Clubhouse and golf courses in California. The DP World Tour is back with the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championships from the Yas Links, and we hope that Rory McIlroy is back in action. And the LPGA is also back with the Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions from Lake Nona Golf Course in Orlando, Florida. Horse racing, some results from last weekend. At Kemp, they had two big races, the Coral Racing Chase, and it was won in fine style by Ansan. On very soft ground, Ansan was taken to the front by his jockey Adam Wedge very early and turned it into a rout, jumping for fun and putting the race to bed in no uncertain terms. Another big winner for Evan Williams. And the Silvianico Conti Chase was won by Pick Doherty for Paul Nichols and Harry Cobden. Again, another facile winner for the trainer who had the horse the race was named after. At Warwick, it was the Classic Chase over an extended distance and a Grand National trial, and it was won first time out after a long absence from former Welsh Grand National winner I Will Do It for Sam Thomas and Stan Shepherd. A brilliant ride by Stan Shepherd. I Will Do It took to the track again after an absence, as we said, won in fine style. A great training performance by Sam Thomas. One to note out though for the Grand National itself is also Mr. Incredible, who came over from Willie Mullins' yard, ridden by Brian Hayes, stayed on in eye-catching fashion for second place. This weekend, the big race is at Ascot. We've previewed it before. The Clarence House Chase, featuring current two-mile champion Chaser Energumene, and probably his biggest rival for this season, Edward Stone. We know it's a two-horse race. We think Energumene will come out on top this weekend, and also at the Cheltenham Festival. Darts, the Bahrain Masters, the first big tournament after the World Championships, was won by the current world champion and new superstar of darts, Michael Smith. He beat Gerwyn Price in the final, 8-6. Tennis, and as previewed last week, it's the Australian Open, the first major of the year. The men's, Djokovic goes into the tournament favourite. Big names to look out for to challenge him are Daniel Medvedev, Rafael Nadal and Nick Kyrgios, who is Australian and in his home Open Championship. Two youngsters, though, who could provide good opposition are Jannik Sinner and Casper Ruud. We do think, though, Novak will win the men's. And for the women's, again, Iga Swiatek is favourite. She'll produce a great standard for the girls to beat. Iga Swiatek is probably a worthy favourite. We like Anya Sabalenka and Ons Jabeur, who we've followed through the last year and are improving tennis players. And look out for youngsters Jessica Pegula and Corey Gauff. Motorsport, the only motorsport that started its championship of 2023, is Formula E. And round one was the Mexico E-Prix from the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez, and it was won by Jake Dennis for Avalanche Andretti Racing, taking 26 points. Pascal Wehrlein from the Tag Heuer Porsche team was second with 18 points, and a couple of bonuses gained by third place man Andrea De Grassi for the Hamminja Racing team also saw him secure 18 points. The next round is rounds 2 and 3 over a weekend with a doubleheader in the dark from the Diria EP. With a Diria EP from the UNESCO World Heritage Site, NBA, and some important results from the last week. Jazz 116, Cavs 114, Golden State Warriors 113, Suns 125, Clippers 113, Mavericks 101, Pistons 135, Timberwolves 118, Celtics 125, Pelicans 114, Knicks 119, Pacers 113, Hawks 105, Bucks 119, Grizzlies 115, Spurs 129, Kings 135, Rockets 115, Nuggets 126, Suns 97, Trailblazers 113, Cavaliers 119, Lakers 115, Mavericks 119, Wizards 108, Knicks 112, Pistons 110, Pelicans 116, Spurs 113, Golden State Warriors 144, Timberwolves 121, Suns 116, Jazz 112, Magic 108, Clippers 103, Nuggets 115, Kings 130, Rockets 114. Heat 111, the Bucks 95, Hornets 106, Celtics 122, Pacers 112, Grizzlies 130, Timberwolves 110, Cavaliers 102, Trailblazers 136, Mavericks 119, Pistons 109, Knicks 117, Clippers 121, Rockets 100, Bulls 132, Golden State Warriors 118, Nets 102, Thunder 112, Lakers 112, 76ers 113, and Nuggets 119, the Magic 116. The conference's top 10s are as follows. The Celtics lead the way in the East on 32-12, the Nets are second on 27-15. The Bucks and the 76ers are tied for third on 27-16, with the Cavaliers on 27-17. The Knicks are in sixth on 25-19, and the Heat are seventh on 24-20. Pacers are 8th, 23 and 21. And the Hawks are 9th, 21 and 22. The top 10 rounded up by the Bulls, 20 and 24. The West have joint leaders still, with the Nuggets and the Grizzlies leading the way on 29 and 13. The Pelicans are 3rd on 26 and 17. The Kings are 4th on 24 and 18. The Mavericks are 5th, 24 and 20. Clippers are 6th, 23 and 22. Timberwolves are 7th with a 50% record, 22 and 22. Gold State Warriors are 8th, 21 and 22. Jazz are 9th, 22 and 24. Joint 10th, the Suns and the Thunder, 21 and 23. Some important fixtures of this week: Hornets versus the Celtics, Bucks versus the Pacers, Knicks versus the Raptors, Wizards versus Golden State Warriors, Cavaliers versus the Pelicans, Hawks versus the Heat, Grizzlies versus the Suns, Lakers versus the Rockets, Bucks versus the Raptors, Suns versus the Nets, Nuggets versus the Trailblazers, Knicks versus the Wizards, Grizzlies versus the Cavaliers, Jazz versus the Clippers, Nuggets versus the Timberwolves, Lakers versus the Kings, Celtics versus the Warriors, Suns versus the Nets, Magic versus the Pelicans, Hawks versus the Knicks, Cavaliers versus the Warriors, Jazz versus the Nets, Nuggets versus the Pacers, Lakers versus the Grizzlies, Kings versus the Thunder, Raptors versus the Celtics, Cavaliers versus the Bucks, Kings versus the 76ers, Heat versus the Pelicans, Raptors versus the Knicks, Mavericks versus the Clippers, Suns versus the Grizzlies, Warriors versus the Nets, Trailblazers versus the Lakers, Pistons versus the Bucks, and the Kings versus the Grizzlies. On to the NFL, and it was a wild card round. Last weekend, the 49ers beating the Seahawks 41-23. The Jaguars coming from 27-0 down to beat the Chargers 31-30. The Bills struggling over the line against the Dolphins. And the Vikings, as we predicted, getting beaten at home by the New York Giants. The Bengals 24, Ravens 17. And a result to bring you next week: the Buccaneers versus the Cowboys. This leaves the divisional championship round as follows: the Chiefs versus the Jaguars, the Eagles versus the Giants, the Bills versus the Bengals, and the 49ers versus the winners of the game between the Buccaneers and the Cowboys. We finish with football and Premier League match day 20 results. Aston Villa 2, Leeds 1. Manchester United 2, Manchester City 1. Manchester United coming from 1-0 behind in that Manchester derby for a deserved win. Wolves 1, West Ham 0. Nottingham Forest 2, Leicester 0. Brighton 3, Liverpool 0, in another calamitous performance by Liverpool. Not sure what's happening there. Everton 1, Southampton 2. Another dagger to the heart for Frank Lampard with a James Ward-Prowse for Southampton. Brentford 2, Bournemouth 0. Chelsea 1, Crystal Palace 0. Newcastle 1, Fulham 0. Arsenal 0. Tottenham 2. The top six in the league are as follows: Arsenal now extended 8 points clear, played 18 with 47 points. Manchester City played 18 with 39 points. And joint third, although Newcastle above on goal difference, having played 19, 38 points, with a goal difference of 22. Manchester United played 18, also 38 points, but their goal difference is only plus 8. Fifth place at Tottenham, played 19, 33 points. And sixth place, unbelievably, are Fulham. How well are Fulham doing? And they were unlucky to lose 1-0 to Newcastle. They've played 20 and have 31 points. Liverpool are currently ninth, and Chelsea are 10th. Two midweek fixtures back from match day 7. Crystal Palace versus Manchester United and Manchester City versus Tottenham. Match day 21 this weekend: Liverpool versus Chelsea, Leicester versus Brighton, Southampton versus Aston Villa, West Ham versus Everton, Bournemouth versus Nottingham Forest, Crystal Palace versus Newcastle, Manchester City versus Wolves, Brentford versus Aston Villa, Leeds versus Brentford, the tie of the weekend: Arsenal versus Manchester United and Fulham versus Tottenham. The WSL saw match day 11's play last weekend: Aston Villa 2, Tottenham 1, Arsenal 1, Chelsea 1 in the big game of the weekend, Everton 3, Reading 2, Manchester United 6, Liverpool 0, Leicester 3, Brighton 0. We have the West Ham versus Manchester City result to bring you next week. The top three in the league: Chelsea lead the way, played 11, 28 points. Second place, Manchester United, played 10, 25 points with a goal difference of 24. And third place, Arsenal, also played 10, also 25 points, but with a goal difference of 20. This weekend's fixtures: match day 12, Manchester City versus Aston Villa, Chelsea versus Liverpool, Everton versus West Ham, Reading versus Manchester United, Tottenham versus Leicester, and Brighton versus Arsenal. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, we've come to the end of another great show. I'd like to say thank you so much to Sophie Blake, such an inspirational woman. And we got the first part of Sophie's great interview about how she got into media, her dyslexia, and her struggles throughout her life with illness. But what an inspirational lady she is. And trust me, she's one of the most positive people I've ever spoken to. And of course, to Molly Campbell. Part one from Molly's interview about 2022, struggles with her knee, but still how she improved her golf. So I'd like to say thank you to those two amazing guests, to you, the listeners, who we always provide the best show we can for, and to Johan, Rafaela, and the team from UK Health Radio, who give us a blank sheet of paper every week and a great platform to perform on. We'll see you all next week.